Welcome to Gemara Markings. Today's shiur is Iruvin Daf Lamed Hey. Don't forget to click on the Daf option in order to view a marked Daf Gemara for today's shiur. If you're not fully familiar with our Gemara marking system and wish to benefit from its great rewards, it is essential that you study all of the introductory material accessed by clicking on the Learn the System option provided on the sidebar of our homepage. If you're already partially familiar, you will benefit by clicking on the brief 4-minute introduction that is available here. Being that our system is a visual approach to the Daf Gemara, it is recommended that you print out the marked Daf Gemara before the shiur. If you wish to be in touch with us, our address is gmarkings@gmail.com. We begin today's shiur, 20 lines from the bottom. You'll notice a Mishnah at the bottom third of the page. Before we begin the Gemara, let's glance at the side under our Nosei, our topic heading, Eruvo Shiyotza Chutz L'Tchum O Shiskalkel Lifnei Shabbos. Someone set up an Eruv, the Eruv Tchumin, to extend his Tchum Shabbos in a certain direction. However, something happened before that, before Shabbos set into the Eruv, and we want to see what is the halacha. So, our Mishnah, Niskalgel Chutz L'Tchum, if the Eruv food that he set up at the edge of his Tchum, 2,000 Amos beyond his city, let's say, and it rolled beyond that point, Nofal Olov Gal, or a heap of stones fell upon it, O Nisraf, or it got burnt up. Truma v'nitmes, or he made an Eruv using Truma, and it became Tomei. Now, when did any of these things happen? Mi ba'od yom, eino Eruv. If it happened during the last hours of Friday, but during Friday time, that's mi ba'od yom, while it's still day, the Eruv is invalid. Mi shechashecha, if after Shabbos set in, something went wrong, in other words, the Eruv was ruined after Shabbos had already set in, Hareza Eruv, then it's an effective Eruv, because the Eruv is all dependent on it being there at the point Shabbos sets in. In previous Gemaras, we've spoken about that the Eruv remains intact through the Bein Hashmoshos period. That's the twilight period after sundown of Friday and into before the three stars of Shabbos appear. Im Safek, if there's an issue of doubt, was it ruined mi ba'ol yom or mi shechashecha? Rabbi Meir, Rabbi Yehuda, omrim harei ze chamor gomol. This is an expression, chamor gomol. Chamor is a donkey and a gomol is a camel. The way that one leads these two animals in trying to, let's say, move them or drive them is, in fact, opposite ways. The chamor is, generally speaking, is led from in front, and that's called and it's led from in back, that is, and the gomol is led from in front. That's generally speaking the way you deal with these animals. However, if a person is finds himself in this situation where he's in doubt as to whether the Eruv is effective or not, so we don't know what his location is. Is his location the city? Or is his location 2,000 Amos outside the city? So if his Eruv is really the new Eruv that he set up, so that would mean that the city represents the furthest extent backwards that he can move, because his new location is 2,000 Amos, let's say, north of the city. The southern limit of his walking would be the city itself. However, if the Eruv is invalid, so the city is his Eruv, means that's his tchum. He could theoretically walk south of the city further, but his northernmost point is where he had set up the Eruv. So, being that we don't know what the story with the Eruv is, he is locked into the space, or to the area between the Eruv tchum and the city itself. In other words, he can't walk south of the city even one step, and he cannot walk north of where the Eruv tchumin that he set up even one step. Rabbi Yossi, Rabbi Shimon Omrim, Sofek Eruv Kosher. If there's a doubt concerning the Eruv, it's okay. Omer Rabbi Yossi, Avtumus Heyed Mishum Chamisha Zekenim Al Sofek Eruv Shekosher. And Avtumus testified in the name of five sages that an issue of doubt concerning the Eruv is kosher. We might glance at the Rabbeinu Hananel that you'll find at the bottom line of the Rabbeinu Chananel commentary to explain the expression chamor gomol a little more vividly. Rabbi Meir Omer Hareza chamor gomol pirush, and Rabbeinu Chananel proceeds to explain. Derech chamor behanhoga, the way of driving a donkey is through something called hanhoga, and v'derech gomol b'meshicha. In other words, the chamor is an animal you push from behind, and gomol is an animal you lead from in front with a rope around its neck, and you draw the rope. U'mishiyesh lo chamor v'gomol. Let us say a person had both of these animals. V'nosan chamor me'achorov l'moshcho. And he placed the chamor in back of himself in order to draw it from in front, which is odd for a chamor. V'hagomol, the Rabbeinu Chananel continues on Omid Beis, and the gomol he placed lefonov in front of him lehanhigo, to push the camel from behind, which also is unusual. Lo zeh mahalech b'mishicha v'lo hagomol b'hanhoga. Neither one of the animals is going to move because it's being treated in the opposite way that you ordinarily treat it. So this person is stuck between the two animals, can't move this way nor that way. So the person between the camel and the chamor is going to be dormant or non-moving. And that's why Rabbi Meir used this example to illustrate someone who is in doubt about whether his Eruv is effective or not. So he is thereby locked into the spot or to the space between the Eruv and the city. And if we're dealing, as we said earlier, with north-south directions, so he can't walk any, if the Eruv was placed north of the city, 2,000 amas, being that the Eruv might not really be effective, so the Eruv spot would be his northern extremity. If the Eruv is not effective, so that's what we just said. If the Eruv is effective, so then the city becomes his southern extremity. Therefore, he is locked between the Eruv and the city. Let us continue now in the Gemara. Nisgalgil chutz l'tchum. The Mishnah made reference to an Eruv that rolled outside the Tchum, and we said that his Eruv is ineffective. The reason for the Eruv being ineffective is, let's say, it rolled outside his Tchum from Friday. So when Shabbos set in, he, being that he was in the city, and the Eruv being 2,000 amas north of the city, if it rolled beyond that point, he had no access to that Eruv. Omar Rava Loi Shonu, we are teaching that it's not a good Eruv, Eloshin is Galgul Chutz L'Arba Amos, that it rolled beyond that 2,000 Amma mark, an additional 4 Amas. It moved an additional 4 Amas beyond that point. Avol L'Toich Arba Amos, if it rolled a little bit more than the 2,000 Amma mark. However, it didn't roll a full 4 Amas. We say as follows: Hanosin eruvo yesh lo dalet amos. A person who places down an eruv, he gets an automatic additional 4 amos from where the eruv is. The Rashi that we want to look at is found 3 lines from the bottom. Hanosin es eruvo hoyel v'niskavi liknes shom shvisa. Since he had intention to have his Shabbos location where that Eruv is, Yeshlo Arba Amos, he has 4 Amos. Dehoyel Vano Arba Amos Mivlaon Betchuma. Havuluhu Kitchuma. Since those 4 Amos that he has are attached to or absorbed within his tchum, it's considered as if the Eruv is still there. Vavi Kenosin es Eruv Babayas Shebesof HaTchum. It's no different than a person placing an Eruv at the edge of a tchum. And now, once that house contains the Eruv, we say Shafihu Elef Amo, even if the house is 1,000 Amos long, Mahalich Eskula V'chutzal Alpayim Amo. The house itself doesn't figure in the dimensions. It's all considered one spot, because it's one enclosure. Same thing with regard to the 4 Amos that we give a person at the end of his tchum. So So in reviewing the last point and making use of the little diagram that we've included in the margin of the Gemara, if the Eruv had in fact rolled out of the where it was placed by a distance of an additional 4 amos, so you'll notice from the new location of the Eruv till his house, it is more than 2,000 amos. It's 2,004 amos. So the person at the when Shabbos sets in, if it had rolled out before Shabbos, he has no access to that Eruv. And even if the Eruv was the spot that he was Koine Rishus, nevertheless he can't go from where the Eruv is now located, from that new 4 Amma mark beyond the Eruv point, he can't go back to his house. So, vis-a-vis the house and the new location of the Eruv, he has no access to it. So, that's why, as the Mishnah says, if it's in Skagel Chutz L'Tchum, and the Gemara points out, and a plus 4 Amas more, it's not a good Eruv. The Gemara continues, Nofal Olov Gal V'chulei. The thought at first glance at this Mishnah is the Iboy Motzi Shokilei, that if he wanted to, he could actually just slip the Eruv. He can get to the Eruv by pushing aside some stones, which would be an issue of Muktza. And the Mishnah is saying that even so, the Eruv is no good in the event that the pile of stones fell on the Eruv on Friday. So if the whole issue is just moving aside stones and that's enough to make the Eruv invalid, Lemo Masnisin Delo Karebi, should we then say that our Mishnah is not in accordance with Rebbe? De'i Karebi, if our Mishnah were in accordance to the opinion of Rebbe, Ho'omar, has he not already said, Kol Dover Shum Mishum Shavus Lo Gozru Olov Bein Hashmoshos? Any type of prohibition that's only rabbinic is not in power during the Bein HaShmoshes time, namely the time that the Eruv becomes valid. So, if you are saying that just because stones are on it, that's what makes it invalid, and the issue of removing the stones is a rabbinic issue, but that's enough to render the Eruv invalid, that would show that our Mishnah is not in accordance with Rebbe. The Gemara responds, Afilu Temo Karebi, our Mishnah is in accordance with Rebbe. Lo Tzricha, the case of the stones, the Gal, is necessary to be taught Deboi Mora V'chatzina. Because here, in order to extricate the Eruv from its current position under the stones, you need these tools. Mora V'chatzina are different types of tools to hew away or cut away at the avalanche that fell upon it, and that involves what we call malachos d'oraisa, Torah level prohibition, or activities that would be prohibited on a Torah level, and therefore even Rebbe will concede that this kind of Eruv is no good. Utsrichi, and the Gemara points out, I need the multiple examples of the Mishnah that teach that different cases that the Eruv is rendered invalid. The Etonin is Galgel. Had we taught the first case of the Eruv rolling out of the Tum, Mishum de Leso Gabe, the reason that the Eruv is no good is because it's not within his reach, so to speak. It's not by him. Avol Nofololov Gal, the Ise Gabe, but the case of the pile of stones that fell upon it, where the Eruv is still there. It hasn't moved out of place. It's just covered with stones. So, Eimol Eve Eruv, I would have thought that since the Eruv objectively is still within his grasp, distance-wise, it should still be a good Eruv. Therefore, I had to teach the case of Nofel Olov Gal, the Itona Nofel Olov Gal. Had we taught that case as it being invalid, as that renders the Eruv invalid, Mishum Demichsi, because it's covered up, Avol Nisgalgel, but the first case where the Eruv, the loaf, rolled out of the Tchum, Zimnin de Osi Ziko Maisi Lei, since Ziko is a wind could very well come and blow it back into within the 2,000 amos. Amol to have any eruv, so I would have thought that it should be a good eruv, even though right now it's outside the tum tzricha. Therefore, we have to teach that case as well. O nisraf truma v'yitmes lomali. What do I need these cases for? The Mishnah taught of the eruv getting burnt up, or an eruv made of truma, but it became tomei, and truma tomei is not something useful to anybody. It's something that must be burnt. What do I need these cases for? So the Gemara explains, Tono Nisraf. The Mishnah teaches the case of Nisraf, Laudiach HaKoichoi to Rabbi Yossi, to show us how far Rabbi Yossi goes, that even though it's Nisraf, even though it's not, it doesn't exist anymore, if there is a matter of doubt, Rabbi Yossi, we saw in the Mishnah, was lenient and said, it's still okay. In other words, you have a suffix concerning when the Eruv got burnt up. But right now, one thing is for sure, the Eruv is not around anymore. But Rav Yossi is, we are showing how extreme he goes, that even though it's not around anymore, since its burning might have taken place after Shabbos set in, it's a good Eruv. So it shows you the koyach of Rav Yossi, the strength of Rav Yossi in his leniency. Tana Truma v'nitmes. The Mishnah also teaches the case of Truma that became Tomei, and we don't know when it became Tomei. Maybe it became Tomei before Shabbos, at the end of Friday, when it never had a chance of becoming Gugud Erev, or maybe after Shabbos set in. Anyway, we teach this case of Truma v'nitmes, the Odiach HaKrechet to Rebbe Meir, to show us the strength, how far Rebbe Meir goes, that even though it is around, as Rashi says, it's Yeshna Ba'olam, and I would have said at Bein HaShmashos it was Becheskas Tohor. In other words, the Truma before, when I put it down, the Truma was Truma Tahora, and therefore it had a status of being Tohor, an assumption of being Tohor. Yet Rabbi Meir says, once a doubt arises, we're not going to follow that Chazaka. That shows us how far he goes, how far Rabbi Meir goes in his stringency. Before we go further in the Gemara, we glance at the side where you see a Nose, we have a topic heading, and we note, Shitas Rabbi Meir Besofek, Doraisa, Dorabonon, Sofek, doubts that arise in cases of something of a Torah level concern, and Dorabonon, something of a rabbinic level concern. We will talk about Tevila, immersion in a mikveh, Eruv, that will be another topic under discussion, and Tumas Meis. You'll notice in the Tanaic source that we're about to learn, which is a rather long source, a diamond appears, featuring two kinds of, two levels of Tuma. You'll see the first will turn out to be a Torah level of Tuma, and when the second diamond appears, it will feature Tuma Kala, which is a rabbinic realm of Tuma. So now the Gemara, which also is noted by a long question, the Kuf indicates a Kushya. V'sova Rabbi Meir Sveika L'chumra. Does Rabbi Meir really hold that when you are in doubt, you are to be stringent, strict in your ruling? V'hotnan, do we not have the following Tanaic source? This is a Mishnah from Aseches Mikvois. There's no name in the Mishnah, hence it's called a Stam Mishnah. And there is an assumption made that a Stam Mishnah, an unnamed Mishnah, is in accordance with Rabbi Meir. So we have the following source. Tomei Shiora Litbol, someone who was Tomei, who descended into a mikveh. Sofek Toval, Sofek Lo Toval, if I don't know whether he was Tovel or not. Bafilu Toval, even if I do know that he was Tovel. However, Sofek Toval Barboim saw, Sofek Lo Toval Barboim saw, but I have a doubt whether the mikveh that he immersed himself in had the required 40 saw, which is the minimum quantity of water to enable a mikveh to purify. V'chein shnei mikvois. Likewise, another case where you have two mikvois. V'achas yesh bo arboim saw, v'achas ein bo arboim saw. One is a complete mikveh, and the other one is a lacking pool. V'toval v'achas mehen, and the person in question immersed in one of them. V'eino yodea b'ezo behen toval, and he doesn't know in which one he immersed. Sveiko tomei. In all of these cases where we have the doubt the suffix arises, we say that the person is tomei. And that has ramifications, of course, vis-a-vis anything he might touch afterwards. The ruling that sveiko tome is when you're dealing with tuma chamura, which means literally stringent tuma or Torah level tuma. Avol, betuma kala, which we can say is rabbinic type tuma. And here the source lists off four different kinds of rabbinic imposed tumah. In other words, we're talking about a person that midoraisa is really tohor. However, there are four cases featured here that the rabbis imposed tumah. Kagon, sha'ochal oichlin tumayin, v'shosa mashkin tumayin, a person that ate food that's tumah or drank beverages that are tumah. That makes a person tumah rabbinically. V'abo roishiv rubo b'mayim shuvim, or someone who whose head and most of his body entered drawn water. Drawn water is water that's unfit for purification. Or a person upon whom there fell three lug is another type of measure. It's a much smaller measure than the sa'ah that we mentioned before. Three lug of drawn water fell over him. And then v'yorad litbol, after experiencing any one of these four events that we just listed, a person needs to immerse himself, rabbinically speaking. So he did. He went litbol. Sofek toval, sofek lo toval. All of these sveikos that we saw before are repeated over here. So if you're in doubt as to whether he was toval, nadvifilu toval, sofek toval bar v'saw, sofek lo toval bar v'saw, even if he definitely immersed himself, but you're not sure whether the pool had the requisite amount of water, or two pools, one has the requisite 40 saw and the other does not, and he immersed himself in one of them, and he doesn't know in which one he immersed himself, sveiko tohor. So, if there's an issue of doubt here, we call him tohor. And Rabbi Yossi Mitana. We'll get back to Shitas Rabbi Yossi in a later discussion in the Gemara, but for the time being, what do we see? We have come to the end of our long question. We saw before that in the case of the Eruv that became invalid, if you will, and you have a matter, if you have a doubt as to when it happened, Rabbi Meir was strict. The assumption being that the realm of an Eruv, the need for an Eruv, and the din of Tchumin that the Eruv comes to alleviate is all of a rabbinic nature. So we saw Rabbi Meir was machmir even in a rabbinic realm. Here in this Tanaic source, when we studied about Tumah Kala, a rabbinic realm of Tumah, and Rabbi Meir, he said Sveiko Tahar. In other words, he is lenient. That would appear to be then a contradiction in Rabbi Meir's approach to the realm of doubt. The Gemara answers, there's no contradiction. Kosova Rabbi Meir, Tchumin, the Oraisa Ninhu. Rabbi Meir is of the opinion that Tchum is a Torah-level problem. It's a Torah-level prohibition to walk beyond one's Tchum. And therefore we have, in effect, a Sofek, the Oraisa, doubt concerning something of a Torah-level nature. And as a rule, sofek d'oraisa l'chumra. However, in the case of something that's rabbinic, like the tumah kala that we just featured, there Rabbi Meir will concede that we can be lenient. The Gemara now asks, this question lasts also a number of lines, as you can see the marking. V'savar Rabbi Meir tchumin d'oraisa, does Rabbi Meir really hold that tchum is a Torah level area of concern? V'hotanan. We have the following source now. Here, unfortunately, only two lines are quoted from a much larger discussion, and there are some diagrams that you can take advantage of if you have a Pirush Chai. These are diagrams that are not from our Perek, but it's from a later Perek. On page 115, you'll notice picture 68. This has to do with, in the course of measuring the distance from the city, and you want to establish where the end of the tum of the city is, you use a rope that measures no longer than 50 amos. That's how tum is measured, 50 amo length ropes. And in the event you come to, let's say, a gorge or some type of crevice, if the if the gap between the two edges of this gorge is less than 50 amos, so then in measuring the tum, you would just throw the rope over, so to speak, over the gorge, and the measurement continues. However, if the gorge or the valley, the depression, is greater than 50 amos, so then there's a method of measuring that you can see illustrated on page 118, diagram 75. This is called mikadrin. Mikadrin literally is to penetrate something. But when you have a situation like is illustrated there, where you have you're measuring outside, you're moving outside a city, and then you encounter a canyon or a gorge of some kind where the descent is very deep, and naturally the ascent up the other side is quite steep. We tell you that there is no need to continue measuring down the incline and up the incline on the other side, but rather which basically is measuring the length of the of those respected diagonal measures, the decline and the incline, but rather you are in effect able to measure just the lateral distance from one edge of the canyon to the other edge, and without factoring in the diagonal measure, and that's what you can see illustrated. For our purposes, Amir Tzashem will speak at greater length and in greater detail about this matter when we get to the sugya that is quoted over here there on Daf Nun Ches. However, for our purposes, this idea of measuring just the horizontal movement, in other words, if you could picture for a moment a flight of stairs, and you're standing at the bottom of the flight of stairs and looking at the top of that flight of stairs, what is the lateral distance that you have moved from the bottom of the stairs to the top of the stairs? That lateral distance is measured as is illustrated, and you're not considering the entire length of the staircase, the entire diagonal dimension. You're simply factoring or calculating the horizontal movement from the bottom till the top. That process is called mikadrin, and it in effect will enable you to have a greater tum. This method is this we would call a type of leniency when it comes to measuring. The Gemara, with all of that in mind, the Gemara now asks, "V'savar Rabbi Meir tchum ben doraisa? Does Rabbi Meir really categorize tchum as a Torah level law? The Hotnan, we have the following source dealing with the measuring of a tchum, the measuring of the 2,000 amos outside a city. It says, Im ein yochol havlio, if you cannot include the gorge within the 50 amo of rope length that you're using to measure. So then, Vizu Amar Rabbi Dostoyb Rabbi Yani Mishum Rabbi Meir, the following was said in the name of Rabbi Meir, Shomati Shemekadrin Behorim. I heard that you can do the measure that you see featured on page 118 of the Pirush Chai, diagram 75, that method of measuring, whereby when you're measuring on the incline, so one person holds the rope at his chest, and the next person that's higher up holds the rope at his feet. And when they continue measuring up, so the person will then that was just measured at his feet will then for the next stage of measuring will then raise the rope to his chest, and the person above him will hold it by his feet. That's called mikadrin. If one were to think that tchum and the measuring involved of establishing the tchum is a Torah level concern, mi mikadrin, would you practice that, the mikadrin method of measuring? Rav Nachman tells us in two other areas of measuring, Ein mikadrin lo ba'orei miklot v'lo be'eglo arufa mipnei shehein shel Torah. When it comes to measurings necessary in the realm of Ir Miklot. We say an Ir Miklot is a city that a person who had killed inadvertently, killed someone b'shogeg, he seeks refuge in one of the cities of refuge. And the law says that just like the city offers him refuge, the tum of the city also offers him refuge, protection from the next of kin known as the Goel Hadam that might come to seek blood vengeance. How do you measure the tchum of an Ir Miklot? Well, since the concept of Ir Miklot is a Torah-based concept, you measure a literal 2,000 amos. And if you come to some type of gorge, you just keep measuring down the incline. And, of course, as we said earlier, that will limit the size of, or the extent of the tchum, because you are taking into consideration the diagonal descent as well in the measuring. The issue of Eglo Arufa involves a case of a murder victim found between two cities, and the city that is closer to the murder victim, they have to follow a ritual known as Eglo Arufa, without getting to any details of Eglo Arufa per se, but in order to establish which is the closer of the two cities when that issue arises, a measuring must be made. So in the course of that measuring, one does a literal type measuring. If there are gorges and valleys, you just go right down the sides and up the next side without the Mekadrin process. So what do we see from here? We see that Rabbi Meir categorizes tchum in a rabbinic realm, because he says that you do practice the Mekadrin method of measuring, whereas when it comes to true Torah areas of law, you don't practice the Mekadrin method of measuring. So how can you answer, as we answered before, that Rabbi Meir holds that tchum is doraisa as the basis of explaining why, when there's a suffix, when there's a matter of doubt concerning the Eruv, that Rabbi Meir is strict? We see here that Rabbi Meir does not view Tchumen as a Doraisa level halacha. The Gemara answers, really, Rabbi Meir does view Tchum as a Doraisa level of halacha, and that's why in a suffix he is machmir, he is strict. Hadidei hadarabei. When it's with regard to didei, means his own opinion, Tchum is Doraisa. And hence, he will be Machmir. However, with regard to the topic of Mekadrin, that is his Rebbe's opinion. That's something he heard from his Rebbe. It's not his own opinion. Daikonami Dikotoni, and to make this point, just read it by through careful reading. Daikonami, by careful reading, you can see what it says in the source that we quoted. It said, Bezu Omer of Dostoy Rabbianai, Mishum Rabbi Meir, Shomati Shemekadrin Behorim. Now, notice we dash the line with Shomati. It means Rabbi Meir says, I heard from my Rebbes, from my masters, from my teachers. I heard from them. That doesn't mean I adopt their approach. Shma Mina. So this shows us conclusively that Rabbi Meir's own opinion is that Tchum is Doraisa, and as far as his Rebbe's opinion, Tchum is Dorabonan. But Rabbi Meir himself did not adopt their approach. The Gemara continues with a question. The question, you can see, lasts a couple of lines. V'romi Doraisa Adoraisa le Rabbi Meir. Within the opinion of Rabbi Meir, we're going to raise a contradiction concerning doubts within the realm of Torah-level issues. On the one hand, we see the realm of Tchumen, and we're shortly going to see the realm of Tumas Meis, defilement to the dead, which is something that has Torah-level ramifications. Disnan. We have a source, Noga Be'echod B'layla Ve'nu Yodea Im Chai Im Eis. Person touched someone else at night. No light and no other senses to pick up on the status of that person that he touched. And Ve'nu Yodea Im Chai Im Eis. He doesn't know whether at the time he touched him, whether the person was alive or dead. Ulamocher Hishkimu Mosom Eis. And the next morning he wakes up and sees that the person is actually dead. Rabbi Meir mitahir, v'chachamim mitamin. Rabbi Meir declares the person tohar. The Chachamim say, no, he is tameh. She call her tmeos kishas mitziyosan. According to the Chachamim, all issues of tumah are based, you determine the status based on their nature, on their situation at the time you discover them. But we have to focus on Rabbi Meir Metahir, and that's why we have a dashed underline. So what do we see? That even though Tumas Meis is a Torah level area, being that there is doubt, Rabbi Meir is lenient. He declares Tara. Let us take a look at the Rashi. Under the Gemara text, you can see a few lines further down, and in the Rashi, Rabbi Meir Metahir, Diomar, he said, Ukme Achazoke, establish him at his original known chazoka, his known status, the esmol chaya hoya. And yesterday, and it was before night set in, he was certainly alive. Alma besveka deraisa, viko chazoka lekula, when you have a matter of doubt in the realm of something Torah related, but you have a chazoka lekula, you have a known prior status that leads to leniency. Also, Rabbi Meir Boser Chazoka. Rabbi Meir will follow that known prior status and rule accordingly, even if it's lenient. Umasnisin Nami, regarding our mission as well, with the Eruv and the Suffolk that arose, Nezel Boser Chazoka, why not follow the original known status? Mekora ki onachosam Torah Havoi. In the case of the Truma that became Tomei, when he placed the Eruv down, he was placing down Truma that was Tohor. There's just an issue of doubt concerning when it became Tomei, but when he placed it down, it had a Cheskas Tara. The Gemara response. Omar Reb Yirmiya. You'll notice we have triangles. These triangles are here to provide answers to what seems to be a contradiction in Rabbi Meir's approach to sofek in something that is of a Torah nature. So Rabbi Yirmiyah says, Mishnosenu kishoyo leo sheretz kol bein hashmoshos. The eruv made of the truma is a case where there was a dead sheretz. Dead sheretz is a dead crawling creature, one of eight that the Torah enumerates that communicate Tumah when they are dead. And in our case, there was a dead Sheretz on the Truma throughout the Bein HaShmoshes time period. It is the Bein HaShmoshes time period during which the Eruv takes effect. The Gemara asks, Ihachi b'ha leimo Rabbi Yossi Sofik Eruv Kosher? If that were the case, is there any room for another opinion? For an opinion like that of Rabbi Yossi that says when you have a doubt concerning the Eruv is kosher? As we just said, since Bein HaShmoshes is the time that the Eruv kicks in, if there was a dead Sheretz on it throughout the Bein HaShmoshes period of time, so how could anyone say that the Eruv is good? Of course, we're talking about an Eruv made of Truma, and Truma Tameya is of no benefit to anybody. Rabo of Rav Yosef, Dami Travayu. So now they give another explanation to the Mishnah, Hacha, with regard to the Eruv made of Truma that eventually became Tomei. Hacha b'shte kite edim askinon. We're talking about a situation where there are two sets of witnesses. A kat is a unit of witnesses, two witnesses. So shte kite edim would be a minimum of four people. Achas omeres miba'o yom nitmeo, one of the witness set. Two people are saying that it became Tomei, the Truma became Tomei while it was still day. That means on Friday, and hence the Eruv never was good. The Achas Omeres Mi Sheikh HaSheikh, or the other set of witnesses, testifies that the Tumah set in only after Shabbos set in. Hence the Eruv was effective. With that, we will now understand why Rabbi Meir, in the case of the Eruv, where you've got these two witnesses, two sets of witnesses argue against one another, so Rabbi Meir takes the strict approach. However, with regard to the Mace, where there were no witnesses involved, there, Rebbe Meir is lenient. Now, Rashi explains more elaborately, and let's take a look together at the Rashi. Rashi we're looking at is five lines from the bottom. Achas omeres mibod yom. One set of witnesses is saying that it became tomei while it was still Friday. Hence, the eruv will be no good. Ubahal pligi Reb Yossi. And in the following, we have the machlokis between Reb Yossi and Rebbe Meir. Reb Yossi sovar, uki trei lavi trei. You pit these two sets of witnesses, one against the other, and they would cancel each other out. The uki truma achazoka kamaisa, and the truma, therefore, is set upon or established upon its original known status. The chiancho, when the truma was placed down as an heir of Torah boy, it was known to be Torah. So Rabbi Yossi resolves a doubt generated by two conflicting sets of witnesses by them canceling each other out, and you base yourself on the original chazok, or the original known status of the truma as having, and it was Torah. Rabbi Meir sovar kevon deiko kas demifka le mechazokay, since there is a set of witnesses, or two witnesses, that are removing the truma from its status. In other words, the two witnesses that are testifying that it was tamei, b'sfeika d'oraisa lo azlinun boser chazoka, when you have a suffix in something that is a Torah level concern, like tumin, like we answered before, that Rabbi Meir holds that tumin are d'oraisa, we don't base our psak, our halachic ruling, on a or on an original chazoka. Avol benogea beachod b'laylo dein kasmos yosu meches kosoi, with regard to the case of the corpse, the touching of someone at night, where there wasn't a set of witnesses that was removing the person from his chazoka. Mukminin lo kol alaylo b'ches kosoi, we established the individual throughout the night on his original known status. We don't base ourselves on the way he is when you find him. Because there's room for saying he just now died. And in such a case, where you don't have, as we said, you don't have any witnesses, you don't have anyone challenging the original known status, so the person in question was known to have been alive, and therefore he enjoys that status throughout the night until the morning. At the morning, so we say, well, just a moment before you discovered him, that's the point of time he died. Therefore, the one who touched him in the middle of the night remains Torah. That's as far as Rebbe Meir is concerned. We continue at the top of Daf Lamed Vav. You'll notice another triangle. This is a number three, a third resolution of Shitas Rebbe Meir. Rav Omar Hosam Trei Chazoki Lekula. In the case of the person that was touched at night, there are two chazoka levels, two chazokas that lead in the direction of leniency. And Rashi points out, even if you had two sets of witnesses that were arguing one on the other, Rebbe Meir would nevertheless say that he is Tohor. Why? Well, because there was a chazoka that the found person was originally alive. There was also a chazoka that the person that touched him was originally tahor. So that even if you had two witnesses arguing with one another, we wouldn't assign weight to the witnesses that would have testified that he was already dead. And in that case, Rebbe Meir would agree that the witnesses would be canceled out, so to speak, and we would go according to the chazoka, because there are actually two chazokas. V'hocha, chada chazoka l'kula. However, in the case of the truma, where he put the truma, and it became Tomei, and we just don't know when it became Tomei, there's only one chazaka, namely that the truma was once known to have been Tohar. And since you have only one chazaka, that is not enough to push away, so to speak, to undo the testimony of the witnesses that say that it had become Tomei. And therefore, in the case of the Eruv, Rebbe Meir will rule stringently. Kashya d'Rabbiosi ad Rabbiosi. Up till now we were focusing on Rabbi Meir, but now let's turn our attention to Rabbiosi. We have an arrow that you can see that tells you to look at Lamed Hei Omid Beis. If you go back to Lamed Hei Omid Beis and find the corresponding arrow, you'll see in the middle of the page the issue of the immersion in the mikveh, and it said there Rabbi Yossi was mitame. In other words, where there was an issue of doubt concerning the mikveh immersion, we ruled the person to be tomei. And that statement of Rabbi Yossi was he was tomei even in what appeared to be an immersion that was only of a rabbinic nature. That creates a seeming stira. And on the side of our Gemara, we have a nosei mivneh heading. You'll notice we have a double underline that will appear in the Gemara. These are yishuv, a resolution of shitas Rabbi Yossi besfekos. We have, in the case of Tevila, we saw he was machmir. In the case of Eruv, let us assume that, as far as Rabbi Yossi is concerned, Eruv is also derabbanan. Not like we saw before Shitas Rabbi Meir, and we've seen in previous other dapim that there are those that hold Eruv as deraisa. No, he, Rabbi Yossi, will hold it as derabbana, just like the case of Tevila was derabbana. Why is it then in the case of Tevila, where there was a doubt, Rabbi Yossi was machmir, and in the case of Eruv, in the case of doubt, Rabbi Yossi was lenient? So, now turning to the Gemara, we read this already, the second line from the top of Lamed Vav, Kashya de Rabbi Yossi ad Rabbi Yossi. We seem to have a contradiction in Rabbi Yossi's. Omer of Huna bar Chinina, Shaini Tuma, the case of Tuma is different, Hoyel v'yesh lo ikur min haTorah. The reason Rabbi Yossi is machmir with regard to Tuma is because, true, here we're dealing with Tuma that's rabbinic, but the concept of Tuma is something rooted in the Torah. The Gemara asks, well, Shabbos nami doraisahi, the realm of Shabbos, which includes our topic of the Eruv and the issue of Tum, Shabbos is also Torah level, and therefore, even though right now we're dealing with something that's rabbinic, but the realm of Shabbos is a Torah level realm, so why is Rabbi Yossi, with regard to the Eruv, why is he lenient? Kosova Rabbi Yossi Tumin the Rabbonan. Rabbi Yossi holds that the issue at hand, which is an issue of tum, that is rabbinic. And Rashi points out, it is true that tum is part of the general category of Shabbos, but the issue of tum has nothing to do with melochos per se. And if one, let us say, were lenient in the case of tumin, that won't lead to leniencies with regard to other realms of Shabbos, because, as we just said, based on Rashi, that the realm of Tum and the realm of the other melachos of Shabbos are so different from one another. Not so in the case of Tuma. The concept of Tuma is one uniform concept, whether it's a Teraisa type issue of Tuma or the Rabbonan issue of Tuma. And therefore, Rabbi Yossi says we can't afford to be makil when it comes to a doubt concerning rabbinic tuma, because that would lead to someone being makil, being lax or lenient, even with regard to a Torah level issue of tuma doubt. The Iboy Asema, lo kashya, and here we have the double underline, again, it's another resolution for Shitas Rabbi Yossi, ha didei, ha derabei. Rabbi Yossi, his own opinion is to treat the doubt with stringency. It is Rabbe, the teacher of Rabbi Yossi, that approaches the issue of doubt with leniency. Daikonami dekotoni. This point is borne out by careful reading of the Mishnah on Rabbi Yossi of Tumus Heid Mishum Hamisha Zakenim Shesofik Eruv Kosher. Here see that Rabbi Yossi isn't saying that he himself holds that Sofik Eruv is kosher, but rather Rabbi Yossi reports that which Avtumus said in the name of five sages. So, as we said, there's no stira in Rabbi Yossi. Rabbi Yossi himself says that in these matters of doubt, we are stringent, and that stringency would apply whether it's a question of a Sofik in Tuma or a Sofik in Eruv. However, his Rebbe's opinion is one of leniency. As you can see with our markings, we have another double underline, Rava Omar. Again, Rava is a third approach to resolve the Rabbi Yossi difficulty. Rav Amar Hosam Hainu Taimed Rav Yossi. There, in the case of Tevila, the reason for Rav Yossi's stringency is Hamed Tomei Al Cheskoso Ve'emo Lo Toval. The person that immersed himself had a status of having been a known Tomei individual. So he had a status of Tumah. Now that there's, did he leave that status? We don't know. That's an issue of doubt. The doubt that he might have immersed is not strong enough to undo a known status of having been Tomei. So that's what we mean here. Hamed Tomei Alches Kosev Eimo Lo Toval. Let us establish him at his original known status of Tumah, and as a result claim that he did not immerse himself. The Gemara asks, Adarabah. To the contrary, Hamed Mikvah Alches Kosev Eimo Lo Choser. Say that the mikveh was once known to be full, and therefore it has a status of being a purifier. So the Gemara says, and we should say that if you are mamid, you establish the mikveh as koso, that would result in our concluding lo choser, that it was not missing, it wasn't lacking water at the time that this person immersed. The Gemara response, the mikveh shelo nimdad. The source was the source in which Rabbi Yossi was machmir by the Tevilah. It was a case of a mikveh that was never measured. It was never measured, so it didn't have a chazoka, known status of being full. As we are about to conclude our shir, let's just remind everybody that if you wish to be in touch with us, we can be reached at gmarkings@gmail.com. Again, our email is gmarkings@gmail.com. With that, we conclude our shiur for today.